welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, for Story Time Without the Stories, where we talk about things without talking about things, where we relate events in poetry so that you have no idea what those events are, but they feel like something. Welcome to Story Time, where all events and all experiences are reduced to stories with a beginning, a middle, and an end, or as we say here at Story Time, a head, a thorax, and an abdomen. Finding a story is like finding a clock in the forest. We are relieved that finally there is order amidst the chaos. Stories define us. It's like stripping all the flesh off of experience and getting down to the bones, which we can line up and make sense of. If there's a picture that is too complicated to memorize or interpret, just keep erasing parts of it until it takes the shape of something familiar. Make it your story. I'm out here in West Makington, in a tiny suburban neighborhood, to search out a story that is both hard to believe and absolutely expected. It's the story of a man named Don Bourgeoisie, who turned into a house and then back again. What's it like to be one of these suburban houses we have all seen, if not visited, or even grown up in? We're going to let him tell that story. Don? Yes, come on in. Thank you. Oh, nice house. I'm sure they appreciate that. Who appreciates that? The house. Ah, come on in, please, sit down. Don, I'm here to get your story. All right. What story is that?
The one where you turn into a house.
Oh, that's my actual life. That really happened.
I know. We'd love to hear the story.
It's not a story. It's something that occurred, like a concert or a disease.
Yes. Tell us about how it happened and what it was like.
So, take some of the events and plug them into the story template. So, for instance, take myself and say that I'm the main character.
Yes, exactly like that.
Well, where do I begin?
You decide.
I mean, if I start telling you things I remember, starting on the day I turned into a house, it'll leave you baffled as to why it happened. But if I begin with meeting Hardy White and the time machine, it could take a few years to tell. That's leaving out my life up to that point.
Well, just start on the day you turned into a house.
Start what?
The story.
All right. Once upon a time...
Except, I don't mean to interrupt you, but this really happened, right?
Yes, but in conjunction with other things, not by itself, like I'm implying. I mean, I turned into a house because of a time machine mishap, but there's other causes too, and then there's the whole dimension of my experience, which has some feelings so complicated I can only express them in sounds. Rhythmic, mournful sounds.
Just start with, my name is Don Bourgeoisie, and I was a house.
Oh, that sounds good. My name is Don Bourgeoisie, and I was a house.
And?
And as much as the feeling persists that a soul resides within, we rarely feel our ghost push up against the internal walls of our body. But if your consciousness resides in a house, you would acutely experience the pressure and constraint of the actual walls that now house your spirit. The firefly in the jar is at least twice imprisoned, by his body and by the jar, and by the earth itself. I hover over neighborhoods in my mind so I can walk the streets again, at least as a distant dreamer. I do this so often I become a bird, and I'm free, finally, to sit on wires and treetops and make the whole sky my town.
You became a bird also?
I didn't have an actual bird body, no.
we're trying to get your story here, Don, of how you turned into a house. And then what conflicts arose, and then what meaning you assigned to the whole thing. All right. The real estate agent walked through the house and told half-truths about the newness of the roof and the desirability of the neighborhood. He made sweeping gestures to indicate the space in the house was vast and the asking price, well, that could be negotiated. Can't everything be negotiated, even the truth? The couple will be happy here, and perhaps they need just a little push to take a risk. He saw visions of idyllic and harmonious days and lovely meals and emotional life events playing out for those who would live here. He was a benevolent storyteller, luring the dreamers and hopeful into a space. All right, this is very nice, Don. Could you start with the date you turned into a house? Like, it was November 2nd. It was just an ordinary day.
Start with the date?
Yes.
Okay, that's not possible, because there was no date. It was a time machine accident. It happened in between time, sort of.
All right, just...
You are asking me to assemble half-truths, to make and argue for a particular worldview. That is not the way I experienced this event. It was complicated, confusing, outside of time, and for the most part, unrelatable chronologically. I can try to express what I felt... Which is as close as you're gonna get, my friend.
There it is, the Isle of Imagiola, sea servant. Our journey is now at its end.
And a good one it's been, Captain.
This will make a wonderful ending when they write the story of our journey. The sun rises as we gently glide into the heavenly blue waters of the Opal Island.
Unless the end of the story happens after that.
What do you mean, sailor?
I mean, if we go ashore and are slaughtered by the angry inhabitants of Imagiola, then that would probably make a better ending for the story.
Please.
Or, what if that's not the end? What if our slaughter causes an international incident and the isle is besieged by our vengeful compatriots who turn the place into a fiery, isolated hell?
You are wrecking the moment. We've had some wonderful times aboard this ship.
But they might leave that out and start the story with a massacre, depending on how much happens after that.
Clearly, the beginning of the story was us leaving the dock, the middle was us at sea, and the end is us pulling up and parking here at this bucolic and not at all hostile island where all stories end because of its idyllic dullness, all right?
Aye, aye, Captain.
My good great God, man. Everyone has the right to string events together in such a way and interpret them in such a fashion that their assumptions are confirmed and their delusions reinforced.
Agreed, Captain.
We set sail from our home port, crossed the sea in a remarkably brave and bold fashion, and successfully delivered the single breadfruit sample to this island so they could see if maybe they want to buy breadfruit from us, even though they grow it here already and ours is rotten by the time it arrives.
The end.
Once upon a time, in a small village, lived a tiny man who lived a very uneventful life, which culminated in a very uneventful death.
That sounds like me!
One day, long after his demise, an unconnected event occurred.
I'd like to buy a duck.
Quack.
But little did our duck-purchasing friend realize that the very person selling him the duck had purchased it from the estate of the small dead man with the uneventful life.
Don't ask where I got this.
Quack. All right.
The man took the duck home and before long noticed that the duck was trying to tell him something.
Quack. Quack.
What is it, little duck?
But all the duck could do was go quack, quack, which to the duck is a primal expression of its experience. The end.
Hello, friends. I am speaking to you from an historic event. I do not know which one. I have been thrust either forward or back in time to a place and moment in which something noteworthy, something life-changing, is happening. It's not clear whose life it is that's changing or what about it is worth noting. and what warrants forgetting, but I know that there's a lot of information because of just the sheer number of events going on around me. If every person here is a conscious organism assembling memories and drawing conclusions through reason, then the stories here must be infinite. Can there be an infinite number of stories? Or are there just the 42 stories that they make movies about? Well, I'm going to try and describe what I'm seeing and hearing, what I'm experiencing, the best I can, but it's overwhelming. Okay, I'll give it a try. First of all, when I was 5, I fell off a wall. That feeling mixed with the taste of chocolate is how I would describe my internal landscape right now. Star Trek, when the language-based episode first aired. Shemp and Mo at Jerkola. The school gym when we had to do tumbling and I was scared and sick. That's what's going on here today. And I know that history will record this and then put it in something and then put it on a shelf somewhere. And that one day someone will be researching something and say, what happened at that event or what will happen at that event? And they're going to want the story as told by somebody who was on the scene with a what is definitely, I don't know when I am, but the microphone is from the 70s. That I do know. But friends, I'm out here, and I know that at some point what is happening here will change and people will go on and experience something else. But this has got to be the beginning or the end of the story. It can't just, it might be the middle, but it's got to be some part of it. So I'll take you back to our studios.
Hear this, that those who turn their ear away at this hour shall, when the story is writ, find themselves stranded, alone on an island of fiery isolation, doomed to dwell forever outside the story of a people, of a destiny. Yet those who in this glorious hour turn their faces to the bright winds of heroic dreams and lend their voices to the choirs of the mighty and the destined, that they may join the great kings and gods, Kofar and Aquapuff.
Cut.
Oh, Mark, for God's sakes, I was in the zone.
The word is Aquapuff.
I know. I remember it by telling myself it's Kofar, like a shofar that you share, and Aquapuff, a combo of Afropuff and Aqualung. No, it's Aquapuff. 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 I feel that's what I'm saying, Mark.
Aquapuff. Aquapuff.
Look, it's just a name. It's not real. Let's just change the pronunciation.
No, it's part of the story. Get it right.
It's fiction. What's to get right? Once upon a time, in a far-off land, lived a young orphan named Mladen. Mladen had no one to take care of him, but he was quick-witted and resourceful. So he would scavenge all day, looking for trash he could sell or scraps of food he could eat. Occasionally, he'd find something worth keeping, like a blanket. One day, while foraging in a remote part of the city, he found something.
Hello! What's this? It looks like a pitcher for syrup. No, it's an oil lamp. That might be gold, too. I'll clean this thing up by rubbing it on my butt, since my butt itches because of my hygiene. I'll polish it and see if it's gold.
As he did this, a genie emerged from the bottle in a puff of blue-tinted smoke that smelled like incense and oil. The genie was furious to be treated in such a disrespectful way.
I am livid to be treated in such a disrespectful fashion.
A genie! Hey, you have to grant me 3 wishes.
Oh, I do? What bad luck running into a magic lawyer like yourself.
Well, you got me. I have to give you literally anything you want somehow. Yep.
Just where did you hear this? Because before I crush you like a loquat, I must know where this nonsense is coming from. I know tracing a rumor is hard and all, but
if you come 15 minutes late to class, we get to leave, and 31 minutes, my pizza's free.
That has to end. So I just want to know who was so cruel as to leave you this cocky and optimistic in the face of the worst possible fate.
You don't grant wishes?
I mean, I don't know, man. What do you mean by that? I can facilitate things. I can broker events. Wishes? I don't know. Are a request and a wish the same thing? Is a demand and a hope the same thing? People ask me for something. I try to figure out what they mean and give it to them.
I just want to be able to have a home and stop having to look for food in trash piles.
I think I can help you with that. How would you like to rob the largest, toughest gang in the city by breaking into their hideout and ripping them off of their ill-gotten booty?
Are you serious? They stole that from people. It doesn't belong to them, and it doesn't belong to us. Even if we survived going into the lair of the most dangerous group of monsters in the known world, we'd have to return the stuff we managed to get.
I was just testing you.
No, you weren't.
Listen, I just got done watching Kubrick's The Killing.
Did you see the end?
No, not yet. But the idea of having a foolproof plan to rob a big organization inspired me. The two sat together in silence for a very long time before Mladen told the genie that he thought that both of them were sort of lost, but that at least they had gained immortality by being one of 1001 stories. Hey, everyone. I am over the moon today to welcome my guest on Storytime Machine, Dale Bookhouse. Someone we have longed to have on telling their story. Thanks for being here, Dale.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Your story is interesting because we had heard about it and contacted you. Is that right?
That's correct. I got a call from your producer, Belinda, and she asked me if my story was true, and I said, not yet.
That's because your story is about being on this show.
That's right.
I'll let you tell it.
In, I'd say, early March last year, I called your show and left a message on the story hotline.
Right, we have a 24-hour voicemail where you can pitch your story.
So I called, and I left my story on the voicemail, and then Belinda called me and asked if it was true. And I said, not yet. And she said, well, it is now. So in June, I got scheduled to come on and tell my story. I met you
literally minutes ago in the other room,
and we sat down, and you gave a count in, and here we are.
Is that the end?
Probably not.
But we'll have to wait a bit to find that out. Let me ask you a few details. I want you to fill in some things. How did you get to the studios?
I started out walking. But I took the train most of the way. But I got out a few blocks early so I could walk and collect my thoughts. I was a little nervous.
Why?
Well, whenever you tell your story, I feel like you're revealing something that's pretty personal.
So a story that started out not true is now true. How does that feel?
I'm not sure if there is any difference. I always felt the essential truth of it before it was realized. And now that I'm recounting it, it's taken on the same characteristics as it had when it was unrealized.
Our lives really are stories, aren't they, Dale?
The end.
People say, Hardy White, tell me your story. They don't really say it, but I could see it in their eyes, or rather I intuit it, because I cannot see their eyes literally. But I know that they're saying this, so I shall tell you my story. Who are you, Hardy White? The year is 2000. I am in Montpellier, France, but my name is not Hardy White, and I don't quite remember why I'm there. But I was there, and I was exploring the ancient medieval city. Home to Nostradamus, home to ancient mystical Jewish thinkers. And it was in one of these sites, in an ancient mikveh, ancient ritual bath there in the medieval city, that I stumbled and fell, cracking my skull in such a way that I was now completely incapacitated. There was no longer any me there. That's when it happened. I became inhabited by a spirit, Hardy White, a time traveler from Tallahassee, Florida, someone I did not know, with whom I was unacquainted, a humble spirit who had somehow gotten access to a time machine and had gone on adventures all over the world. Something must have happened to his physical body, and he needed a vessel, and here I was, a vessel with no soul. And so this spirit inhabited me, and I became Hardy White, and I started to travel the world because I found his time machine, because suddenly I had all the contents of his pockets were in my pocket. And I wiped the blood from my head and pulled out the piece of paper, and it gave me an address in Tallahassee, and I went there, and it was a warehouse, and I opened it up, and there was a time machine there, and I won't even begin to describe it because I don't want you to give away any of the secrets. If I say, oh, it looked like an old Pontiac, or it was a big box or something like that, you're going to try to make one. If I say, oh, it looked like a vehicle, but on the back was a big disc, that's the one from the movie. Don't make that one because you'll go back and meet the Morlocks. Who are the Morlocks? The Morlocks live underground, much like people in Quebec in the winter. And then they come out, they're all hairy and everything. I don't know if Canadians are like that. I haven't spent much time there, but I love them, and I so enjoy the food in Montreal. Oh, you don't need a time machine to go there. I am another person. There's someone in me, another story. Who was I when I journeyed to France? I do not know. Just another soul. Maybe I was a tourist. Maybe I was a student. I do not know. But it didn't become, it wasn't my story anymore. My story shifted, and now it's a different one. That happens to a lot of people. Does it? I don't know. Does it, though? It might. I used to watch the soap operas a lot, and occasionally somebody would get amnesia. And I know you say, oh, that doesn't happen in reality a lot. How do any of us know? So the person would somehow become someone different, like, oh, Mickey Horton or whatever. I'd say, no, you're not Mickey Horton. How do you think, why do you think you are? Because my belt buckle says MH on it. So I'm making some assumptions. And then you start telling yourself stories to fill in gaps in your memory. And then you start becoming those stories. And I did this. I used to have a booth at the flea market, and I sold ashtrays. And one day a fella comes up and he said, I notice you have this one ashtray from the Mahoho Casino. And I go, Mahoho Casino? I didn't know I had it. And there I did have it. And the emblem on it was strange to me. It was a strange design. It was a geometric pattern. And it had sort of gold and purple inlay. And I said, this is really unusual. I don't know that I've seen this before. I'm not even sure if it's my ashtray. And he said, yes, I would like to give you $1,000 for it. And I said, $1,000? Now, wait. If it's that valuable, maybe I had to check out and see what it is. And he said, you didn't even know you had it 5 minutes ago. I said, less than 5 minutes ago, seconds ago. And now you're quibbling. You say, well, whoa, I'm not even going to take $1,000 for it. So do all the research you want. But you see, when I walk away, it won't be worth anything anymore. You found the one person for whom this has value. Oh, and it's just an ashtray, but it wasn't just an ashtray. You see, when Hardy White had gone on these, journeys all over the world, he discovered certain things and certain truths which he immediately forgot. Why? Because when you start keeping truths, it's like breadfruit. I've never seen a breadfruit, but I'm told that it won't keep forever. And so you have to keep it fresh. And I guess the best way is to grow it right there. Now, we would do this with all of our food. We would grow it right where we were going to eat it, which is the kitchen table. You say, why not in the garden? Well, why cut out that step? Grow it right where you're going to eat it. And then it evolved to where we're growing our food on a shelf projecting out of our chests. It just seemed to be convenient. See, the plant would grow. We ate a lot of plants. The plant would grow and go right into our mouths. And we would just chew on this thing that came from ourselves. Is this true? It's a story. And where I come from and the part of the country I came from, the story meant to lie. And so I'm very self-conscious about not including any actual truth in anything I say that's a story. And you say, well, there's a thing now they call true stories. I said, what? I said, yes, there's a thing now they call true stories. Have you seen it, like Game of Thrones and all? I say, no, I have not.
So, yeah, people take real events and then make them the character of the story. I did not know this was true. You see, I have traveled all over, not really all over the world, in my mind, through books.
Oh, yes. I say the art of reading. Is it an art? Is it a skill? It's an art the way I do it because I don't see all the words. You know, I cull things out. That's a bit of an art right there. Some people just look at the words, read them all, and then connect to the meaning in the most accurate way possible, connect to the intention of the writer. That's not what I do at all. I look at this and I come to the text and I say, what dimension of misunderstanding can I bring to it? How can I impose my own assumptions on this right from the get-go and make it my story? And I would do that as I would travel. I would reach a culture and I'd say, tell me your most sacred stories. And I'd say, I'm going to go home and tell them to my people, except I'm going to turn that god into a little bear. And then that's how I'll tell it like that. Oh, my friends, what are you doing? Are you telling me a story? I am, just for fun. I thought we'd have. I'm sorry to lie. I'm not really lying to you. Here's the thing. When I was young, I was told that it is okay to make up fiction. It is not frivolous because my Victorian ancestors would find out if their children were making up stories, like anything fiction, and they would chop them up into little pieces and make them into pies. Such was their conviction that this was a wrong thing to do, that it was frivolous to have an imagination. We know now that this is not only wrong, but dangerous. We must imagine ourselves out of situations. We must imagine ourselves into the future. That's the only way to survive, is to come up with these stories. Now, making your life into a story, that I'm not so sure about. Not long ago, I went to the autobiographical and biographical section of the bookstore, and there I stood, having to go to the bathroom real bad, so I couldn't concentrate on anything. I left. I went towards what I thought were the public restrooms, but it wasn't. It said, employees only. So I left the building and I got in my car knowing that it was a long way from my house and I wouldn't quite make it. Oh, but I did, barely. But the pain of having to go so bad. And I went home and I went, and then I said, well, I might as well go back. And I went back to the bookstore and I went back there and I went back to the biography section and I stood there and I stood in the autobiographical section. And I said, look at these lives. Some of these books are people telling their own story. Some of them are other people telling someone else's story. Sometimes a dead person's story. Sometimes a person they've never met. Sometimes a person who's still alive. Sometimes they're telling someone's story. That person doesn't want their story told. So there's all sorts of variations going on. You say, how much of it is real? So, well, it can tell you something. Can it? Yes, anything can. It can tell you something. There's something in there, and there's a kernel in there. All right, let me say this then. So there's a kernel. You say there's a kernel in there. Yes. All right, I don't mean to get gross or anything, but let's say that you're really hungry for corn. Mm-hmm. And then I say, come over here. I'll show you there's a thing over here that's occasionally got little pieces of corn in it. You can dig them out. And you go, no. They're contaminated. And I say to you, can the truth be contaminated by lies when it is surrounded and so intimately soaking in them? Can that corn ever be palatable again? Can we ever dig it out and make it into a chip or a fritter, say? Or bread? Can it be bread? Can it be bread? Now I don't know what I'm saying because I was thought, am I talking about a dog or a loaf? I could be talking about either. My goodness. What is your life, Mr. Hardy? Why, don't say, I don't believe in titles. Don't say I'm Mr. Well, if I did have a title, what would it be? I guess Cap'n. C-A-P apostrophe N. And it is not short. A lot of people say, that's short for Captain. No. Cap'n is different. Cap'n is like something you get when you're famous for cereal or something. It's just an honorific. You don't have to literally. Colonel is like that in some places. It used to be, it still is in Kentucky, but I believe
in places like Pennsylvania and everything, you'd be a colonel, but you're not really a colonel. It's an honorific. All right? I would like something like that, but something more confusing. That's like dentist. I go, no, I'm just an honorary dentist, really. No, there's an emergency dental procedure you have to do right now. Oh, I'm not a real dentist. I was just telling a story. And I had to tell this story about myself to make me feel like my life had some worth, maybe. Who are you? If you don't get in that biography section, are you anybody? What if you get in the biography section and it's all wrong? Could you believe that? You know, I was just looking at the Elephant Man story the other day. And the Elephant Man story, I believe the character is called John Merrick. But the real-life person is Joseph Merrick. They just got the wrong story, right? They just got his name confused. So, is it a different person? Are John Merrick and Joseph Merrick two different people? I do not know. I don't know either. Tell me now. Okay, the show is not only halfway done, but just tell me what you're getting to now. Because I feel like a lot of things you've said, Hardy. Okay. I feel like you're confronting me. I am a little bit. I won't do it gently because I love you. I love you. I love you too. However, I feel like you're saying something about, I like stories. I like them too. But I feel like you're saying something negative about them. No. I'm just saying, you know how I am. If I see someone who's shoving needles up their fingernails, I always like to, I know I'll say something like, I know it's none of my business, but do you need an alternative to that? And I say, well, maybe, what's your idea? My idea is this, that sometimes I feel that stories are oppressive. How so? It's about like when they say, if you really want that job, you have to put on makeup and a suit. So I can't be myself? No, you must be some sort of edited, fake version of yourself. And to me, it's just this version of the truth that's conforming to something, to a predetermined outcome. So I want to hear what you're saying, but I sort of want to know where it's going before you even begin. Okay? Because there's certain things I don't want to hear or I don't want to think about. So if you could just plug them into this form, that would be fine. But you know me. Oh, I always err on the side of freedom. Because I do not want to have to fit into some sort of form. No, I want my life to be a poem. And I want to be able to say poem instead of poem. And I want to be able to put things together out of order. And I want to be able to describe smells when I'm describing sights. I want a sort of magical synesthesia that I bring to all the events that I have to account for, their details when I'm conveying information. You say, what's going on over there? Describe the game to me. And I would say, the game is like having pine needles poured on me. That's what it's like. The game is like smelling that resin, but at the same time feeling the discomfort of small but repeated pricks, assaults to your senses. None of them can kill you, and none of it will kill you. But I say, what are you talking about, man? I say, oh, I'm sorry. I was describing my feelings. Because you see, I am not an all-powerful narrator and observer of the world. I am someone immersed in it. I am a feeling creature. That's all I have. And what you want is a dispassionate, godlike narrator to tell you why everything has happened, to fit it into the puzzle of existence, to take all the details and all the events and make them seem connected. Give them some sort of pattern, something that can be figured out, something that can be solved. You want a solution to the mystery. And I say you are in the midst of a long and confusing poem that changes directions constantly. You are in the midst of a symphony that never repeats a section, that meanders forever, that forgets that it even began. And to me, that's a beautiful thing. Oh, the places we can go. Then we're not constrained by anything. So when I sit here and I talk to you, I do not have to have characters. I do not have to have a plot. I do not have to have
plop. I do not blop the blop. Plop. See, I don't even have to make words.
So that's the thing. I started talking to you, and I liked the sounds better than the content, and so I shifted. I shifted to sounds only, because the sounds started to better represent my feeling and what was going on inside of me than the words that I was spouting. They're somebody else's. Those sounds I sort of made up. I love it. It's mystic. If we went around speaking to each other like that, we would never get anything done, and I would be unable to purchase a loaf of bread from your delicious bread loafery. However, life isn't just buying bread. Sometimes life is sitting there. Sometimes life is reflecting. And when that happens, you want to be able to drift above the trees. You don't want to have to make a map. I don't want to make maps. When I make a map, I leave things out. When I make a map, you can't see everything. Say, look, this is our island. That can't be our island. Where are the trees? They're right there. You're just looking down on them, so they look like little pinpoints. Those aren't trees. They ain't trees. I'd show them to 1,000 people, and not one of them would say that's a tree. A tree is a thing that stands before me, in front of me, that towers over me. You've got me looking down on this thing. This is a bunch of scribbles on paper. This doesn't help me at all. Should I descend into this world, I will flatten my own. I will become two-dimensional like this thing that you were showing me. I don't want to do that. I want the trees to rise up in front of me. I want the other end of the island to be invisible to me. I want to have to explore it. I want to be able to walk around it and never see it in one glance, ever. That one glance is my life. The one glance is the sum total of my memories. That's the glance, broken up, shattered over time, so that some of the pictures that I've taken have faded by the time I take new ones. You'll never see the whole thing. You'll never see the whole thing because the end of it is always breaking away, fading away, going back to its essence. Oh, my friends, put your hands up. Put your hands down. Look at you. Do whatever you want with them. That's the beautiful thing. So what shall I do, Hardy? Yes, you just go. Go. Oh, you're making noises. That's a good thing. That's a good start. You're clapping. That's a good start. You're feeling the need. You're going to be... Not at the next cocktail party. Now you're not going to have to be a jerk, but when someone asks you, if everybody asks you what you do or what's your story, you're going to say something that seems as if you're a lunatic, because you're going to suddenly say something inventive, and they're going to roll their eyes and all. But you know what? If you're going to tell a lie, tell an entertaining lie. If you're going to make up things about yourself, if you're going to claim that you understand what you see and experience, then you might as well color it. You might as well decorate it, because what you're seeing is just a shadow. It's just an outline. It's one of those those silhouettes that they used to do in the 19th century. Was it the 19th century or before that even? But they would say, come on up against, get up against the wall. And they go, are you going to shoot me? No, turn sideways. If I was going to shoot you, I'd have you look straight on. Turn sideways. Now I'm going to put this candle next to your ear. And then I'm going to draw your shadow. I'm going to trace your shadow. And then I'm going to give it to your mother, and she's going to cry. And that's what they used to do before they had photographs. Or maybe at the same, maybe they had, this was a something that was going at the same time. I don't know. But they did have paintings, but nobody would say, you know, the average person can't make a painting of somebody that's accurate. They're all going to look, you know, it's wonderful, though. I'd love to have amateur paintings of myself all over the, because I'm a narcissist, but I'm also full of whimsy. So I'd love to have cartoons of myself all around. I don't think so. I do have pictures of people on the wall, but none of them are. They're really. It's really interesting. The people. Can I tell you who's on my wall?
Yes.
Well, first of all, is my great grandfather was in. Now you'll know something about myself if I tell you this story. Here's a story. There are right next to me 4 pictures on the wall. The first picture from left to right is a picture that was of my great-grandfather as he was depicted in a newspaper ad for tobacco. My great-grandfather, an avid smoker and now dead person, Used to smoke a pipe and cigars and cigarettes, anything he can get his hands on. Smoke, smoke, smoke. He enjoyed the tobacco, and he loved it, and he loved that, and I think probably alcohol, and also going off on manic flights of fantasy. So he was spotted one time by somebody who was doing an ad campaign, and they said, "Sir, you have that dignified look and long horse-like face that says, I am affluent. So could you please pose for this ad touting our tobacco?" And he said, "I guess." So we cut it out of the paper, I guess, years and years ago, glued it on some black paper, and there it stands, a portrait, a sort of black and white print portrait that's been lightly tinted and colorized. Next to that is a picture of Thomas Merton that I printed out onto just printer paper and put it because I liked his expression, because his expression was looking at me like, stop that and get back to work. And I need that. I need Thomas Merton, the famous monk, who lived out there in Gethsemane, Kentucky, not far from here, and I've been there, where they make fudge and cheese and pray all day. Hallelujah! And there he is, that monk, Trappist monk, looking at me, giving me that glaze with those light blue eyes, except this is a black and white picture, but I know they're blue, because they'll just look through you. They're all liquidy, and they're not judgmental, they're just amused. And then next to them is an autographed picture that says, to Hardy White, from Colin Baker, a Doctor Number 6, and it is a picture of Doctor Who from his sixth incarnation, and he's a really, the actor is a really nice fella, and he's very nice, and there was nobody there at the time. I thought it was underappreciated. I was like, this is crazy. This guy is, not only was he a good Doctor Who, in my opinion, maybe the scripts weren't great, but he's a nice fella. So why wouldn't anybody want to talk to him? I did not talk to him because I am shy, pathologically so, and I know it's pathological because I've been tested. I've been cut open, and they've smeared some of my consciousness onto a Petri dish, and they go, yes, it's self. Now, the next one is a original watercolor by Emily Kay. I don't want to say her whole name because I don't want to embarrass her or anything, an artist. And I'm very proud to have that. That is a Three Stooges-headed monster. And I love it so much. And I look at it every single day. And Emily doesn't even know. Probably doesn't even know it's next to my desk. But she's a fantastic artist and somebody I wouldn't have known but for this radio show. Because it's a window. The radio show, for me, is a window. But it's completely painted black. So that, I don't know, that's kind of problematic, but here's the thing. You can hear me on the other side of the window, and occasionally you will tap on the glass and you will say, Hardy, I know you're there. And I will say, friend, I suspected you were out there on the other side of that blackened out window, and now I know that you are there. And occasionally you will open up the window just a crack and pass something under it. And when that happens, I know that there's other people out there. And I know that I'm not just a voice in the, what's the opposite of the wilderness? In the highly developed, just overdeveloped, packed, concentrated, my voice going out to one of the most overbuilt, congested areas in, you know, not in the world, because there's worse places. But gosh, we all live together. For radio waves wise, I'm going out, to New Jersey. And New York City, North Jersey. Now, do you love those places? I do. And you know why? I'll tell you why. Especially North Jersey. Let me tell you why. Because when my voice started to go out, you start making connections. It's just like when people used to be drafted into the army in back in the day when there was the draft and everything. They'd go in and they would meet people that they didn't grow up with. You know, and there'd be no other reason for them to come together. And then they come together and they say, I have found my siblings. I found people. Oh, my gosh. You know, and the more you interact, the more you make connections that go deep. And then you start having a love of their home. You know what I'm saying? As they invite you into it. And so I must say that I love the place where I live, and I love the place where I'm heard. Now, this is just broadcast, but then on the internet, think about this. Then we talk to each other all across the world, and we're drawn together. And then our places are drawn together so that we care about the places that others live. And no longer do they seem strange and foreign, because they aren't foreign. They're the homes of our friends. They're the homes of our siblings. They are important to us because they are important to those that we care about. And, you know, you can say, oh, how can you love all these people? Let me put it in terms easy to understand. When somebody cares about you, you start to care about them, unless something changes that. So when you care about what I'm saying to you, or you say, Hardy, oh, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'd love to hear your voice. It helps me in some way. And I say, that's fantastic. I cared about you in theory, but now that I know who you are, I care about you. And you say, you care about me because I care about you. And I say, I care about you because you care about me. It's care about you and it's care about me. And we spiral off into a wonderful recursive echo chamber of care. Oh, it's lovely, isn't it? And then it starts to evolve into something that's more like love. And then the love always breaks open because love can't really be contained, and it becomes something bigger, an acceptance of our condition, something that transcends love even, something that puts you on a level with all other creatures. Oh, we're feeling that connection right now, aren't we? Woo! I don't want to get you. I'm stealing the preachers do that a lot and everything. It gets you worked up, and it works. It's just like being a coach. That's why coaches do it in locker rooms and everything. You can get people fired up with your own passion by making sounds and all. And it's wonderful. But what do you direct that to? Like, you don't only say, oh, that's a great motivational speech. Who's giving that? The commander of the troops who are about to kill your village. Well, and you don't want them to be motivated too much. So you say, well, gosh, I have a lot of conditions on that. So how can it be done? How can it be done? What can we get riled up about without maybe causing harm? And I say, listen, I've made a little song about that. It goes something like this. It goes, so what are you doing? Oh, you now? I guarantee you forgot what we were just talking about.
I sort of did.
I know it. Isn't that lovely? I am one of the most prolific composers of amnesia music. And that is, I can distract you with a non-melody that will make you forget what we were talking about. Now, I've tried doing this in business negotiations.
It does not work.
It doesn't work very well because those people are ready for it. They are ready for tiny distractions like that, and they don't care about me, and they're not willing to give themselves over to the spirit of it. But if you are, I promise to return you just like you left, but without some of the negative stuff. How are we going to get rid of that? You're just going to forget about it. It's just going to wash off of you the stuff that you needn't, the stuff that is hurting you that doesn't have to be. Well, what has to be? I can't do anything about some physical things. You know, you can't think your way out of a severed hand. But I'm telling you this. If you are feeling the effects of something that you believe to be invisible, if you are being tormented by ghosts, I say, I will help you blow them away. Ghost blowers. The ghost blowers. That's my, they're just big fans. It's just like it looks like a leaf blower. But you say, well, why? I always wonder this about leaf blowers. So I have a leaf blower and it's electric. And you say, well, that's not very powerful. The guys walking around the neighborhood have jetpacks on their back and they have a leaf blower that'll blow over a blah, blah, blah tree.
I said, well, that's not, you know what? I know for a fact that's not an actual leaf blower. Those are ghost blowers. Because why would you need a motor? Why would you need that strong a thing? That's like a wind machine for a movie. You don't need that. That's the way they test the aerodynamics of sports cars. So, no, that's not what that's for. My little thing, electric thing, is a leaf blower. Are they gone? Did the ghosts leave? You and I entered the room together and we sat down quietly. I knew that there were other presences there. Can you hear them, Hardy? I think so, friend. Let us sit here in silence for a minute. They are noisy. They will make themselves known because they can't sit still. They have to show off. They want to be the center of attention. They won't let us rest in peace like this. They won't let us commune. Eventually, we'll hear from the ghosts. And when we do, we will hear the pitch of their ghost voices, and we will counter it. We will counter it with some kind of harmony, or we will counter it with some sort of pleasing dissonance. We will make a chord of the ghosts' voices. We will blend it into our own music. And eventually, they will not be able to get through. They will scream and scream, but every scream will be a harmonic, sung note. And it will go unnoticed, and it will fit. It will fit into the music we're writing. And we won't have to be tormented by them. We won't have to be bothered by them, because they won't be an annoyance. They'll be just another beautiful musical instrument that we're playing in this symphony that is our symphony. You mean our lives? No, the symphony, it's just a symphony, but with imaginary timpani. And imaginary violins and very, very real violas. So I really desperately want to. I get told these viola jokes and I can't tell them because I think they're hurt. They're at some level, they're hurtful. And so, things that I think we think are funny are ways of bullying up our gangs. You know, if we laugh at an other, if we laugh at a scapegoat, but goat also means greatest of all time. So is that who you really want to torment? You're tormenting the wrong one. Invite them all. Invite all goats into your circle. Both kind. The stinky kind that sound like screaming demons and the kinds that are the best of all time at what they do. Bring them all in. Bring them all in. Make a sort of goat curry. No, that's terrible. That's not what I meant. You know, a burgoo. Nah, that's not. My friends. Are you excited? About what? I don't know. Something. Something coming up. You dreading something or excited about something? Who knows whether the future will get here. I'm going to come see you up in New Jersey soon. That's going to be like, oh my gosh. I can't even believe that. That's it's going to be a meet and weep, is what I like to call it. Do some hugging. Let me know what your hug status is, because I don't move in first. You're going to have to say something. You know what? It seems awkward, but it's freeing. It's like asking pronouns or something. You go, oh, it makes me self-conscious. Yes, but at the end of the day, you're saying, you matter to me. So I don't feel embarrassed. I'm just saying, hey, I care. I'm like, I'm all in on this relationship with another human. I would love to show you the care and love and respect that I absolutely would like to have. Oh, my gosh. I'm prepared to give what I would like to receive. And what I would like to receive is that someone being patient with me, asking me, and treating me with dignity, and I shall treat you with that same dignity, and we meet as beautiful spirits. So I doesn't that sound good? So don't ever be afraid to either come up and talk to me or something like that. That'd be fine. I've spent most of my life so it's too shy to not be lonely, and that's ridiculous, because then whenever I do make friends or I do feel comfortable, I feel trusting about my presence of another person, you know what I'm saying? I think, oh, what have I been depriving myself? You know? Who's doing the judging here, really? Because most of the times I feel very unjudged by others. It's me that's bringing that, I think. You know, some do. And that's fine. We're probably not going to be super close buds. But you never know. And just leaving yourself open to other folks is just, it can be remarkable. You can be so, nobody thinks you're weak when you're friendly, necessarily. I know some people do, but I've met some friendly people who I know are secret hero geniuses. Like, they're just, they're so powerful that they don't care how they look. Or they don't care, you know, it's not that they don't care about it. They can both care about other people and be unaffected by their judgment. Isn't that amazing? So I would love to get there. I want to be there so badly in my life. I would like to be that, just so open that, you know, I'm not going to be damaged, and yet I'm walking around emotionally completely naked. I'd love that. So I'm so accepting. I think that's going to happen probably moments after I die, because if I have any consciousness left, I'll go, oh, God, we got nothing to lose. But it'll be too late. It'll be too late, because while you're alive, you feel like you got something to lose. While you're alive, you can be isolated. While you're alive, you can be cast out. While you're alive, you can be punished. While you're alive, you can be hated. You can be loathed. While you're alive, when you're dead, then what? But I don't want to be dead. Not yet. I want to be alive and not alone. I want to be in the midst of that wonderful power of shared experience. That's what I want. I want to be with you and acknowledge that we're alive at the same time, and isn't this crazy? And why don't we get like a seltzer or something? Don't put down beverages. I'm going to run. Like, we can't judge them all, and I don't drink a lot of things, so I'm sorry. If just having a club soda makes me seem less pretentious, so be it. I'll add my own citrus essence, which I carry with me. Oh, my friends, we are reaching the end of our time together, both literally and literally, scale-wise, different scales. Right now, our hour is coming to an end, but, you know, I'm sure that our time together on Earth is coming to an end at some point. Oh, let's jam as much experience in. Nah, just pace yourself still. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I haven't figured it out yet. When I do, I'll let you know. But I still haven't come up with a lot of rules for myself, so I'm not going to impose the ones that I'm not sure of on you yet. Let me try it out. I'm still working through some things, but I'll let you know at the end what worked and what didn't. And then there you have some tips. That'll do you more. I want to give you some philosophy that's closer to like those tips from Heloise, like, oh, blood on your shirt? Try vinegar. That's what I want, something that's practical. Something where the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. So this tastes good, and it gives me superpowers. That's some good pudding. If you can get there. And here's the thing. Pudding, I understand, for the British means any dessert. It's just like what's dessert. So that's amazing what you can do with that. So my friends, I want to thank you. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange. WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, my friends, I will see you again next week, and I'll see you up there at Monty Hall soon, too. So, love y'all.
Lord Jesus Christ, Emmanuel, this is your son, Isaiah, talking to you. This is Isaiah, I say, Father. Father, I'm asking you right now. I know you can do it. I know it's going to be done. But I'm asking you right now, Father, just to convince them right now. Everyone that got their hands on the radio and the ears, pay bills right now, Father. Anoint them right now with the power of the Holy Spirit, Jesus. Take pains out of the Father. Father, right now, go into that convalescent home.
The storm of life rages, stand by me.
Stand by me.
And I'm like a ship out on stormy sea.
Stormy.
When this whole world
is lost in me.
World like a ship. Sometimes I give up the right for the wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Living in a mean world. Having my trials and tribulation here.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
Sometimes I give up the right for the wrong. Standing down here, Lord. Having our charges here this evening, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm growing old and feeble, stand by me.
Stand by me.
And a better help I cannot regain.
But regain.
Oh, when the world
is lost to me.
Oh, like a ship. I'm going home to live with Jesus. Stand by me.
Stand by me.
And there's a world I can't do no more.
Do no more.
Lord, when the world
is lost in me.
World, I'm like a ship on
the sea.
When the storm
of
life. Lord, help me, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Sometime, Father,
sometime
I stand with a folding arm. Sometime, Lord,
sometime, yeah.
I'm tossed on every leaning side. Doors is closed in my face.
Yeah.
Sometime I give up the right for the wrong. When the storm of life arrays, stand by me.
Stand by me.
Like a ship out on stormy sea.
Stormy sea.
Oh, when the world
is lost to me.
Oh, I'm like a ship
out on the sea.